Juno Afternoon is made possible with support from Hanson Gress, delivering IT support to local businesses for over 15 years. I'm your host, Christina Love, and on today's show, our focus is the World War II Funter Bay internment camp. As the Raven flies, Funter Bay is only 17 miles west of Juneau on the northwestern tip of Admiralty Island. Funter Bay's history is complex. It's Tlingit territory, once the location of a cannery, a mine, and as an internment camp for people who were forcefully removed from St. Paul and St. George Islands after the Japanese bombing of Dutch Harbor. Today, we're here with the family members of internees. Thank you guys so much for joining me.
You're welcome.
Welcome. So could you please introduce yourselves and tell our listeners how you're connected to this project?
Okay, my name is Mary Lekanoff, but up on St. George you pronounce it Lekanoff. But anyway, I'm one of the co-chairs of the Funter Bay Project, and I've really enjoyed working with Martin and others on establishing this project. And the person holding all of this together is Nico Sanguinetti. Thank you.
Hi, I'm Z Malabidoff. I'm from St. Paul Island. My parents were from St. Paul. They were at Funter Bay when they were young, too.
Hello, my name is Jacob Merkulieff. I live on St. Paul Island. I was born on St. George. My parents are Alexei and Mary Lou Merkulieff from St. George Island, and we've lived on St. Paul for probably the last 50 years or so, and I'm here in support of the stuff going on with the Funter Bay Project. Thank you, Martin, for doing all you do out there.
My name is Serafima Edlin. I currently live in St. Paul. My family is from St. George, and we're moved over to St. Paul. I work for the Tribal Government of St. Paul Island with the Ecosystem Conservation Office, and am really excited to be on this project.
And my name is Martin Stepton. I'm originally from St. Paul Island, but I live here in Juneau now, and I with Friends of Admiralty and many other friends and people in Juneau helped get the Funter Bay Project going starting in 2014 to where it is now.
And I'm Nico Sanguinetti. I'm here in Juneau. I'm the curator at the Juneau Douglas City Museum, and I was brought onto this project a little while ago, and we are going to be hosting an exhibit over the summer discussing the Funter Bay internment camps.
That's so great. Our show is broken into two different sections, and the first part is listening to your stories, and the second part we'll be hearing about the project. We have one more person here in the studio that has not introduced themselves yet.
Yes, I'm not from the Pribilof Islands. However, I was married to one. He was from St. George, and he was Flory Lekanoff, and he was interned at Funter Bay. And it was a story I didn't hear about until the 1980s or 1990s. And I was flabbergasted because I was born and raised here in Juneau. And I went to school with a lot of the students like Ruth Stepperton, Yulita Merkulieff, and others. So I feel like I'm coming around full circle. And I'm happy to be a part of this group. Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you so much, you guys. I'm so happy that you guys are here. The other day, my friend said something really profound to me. And she said, sometimes I find myself intellectualizing things so I don't have to feel about it. And I've spent a lot of my time thinking about how do we get people this information to where they really, really know it? Like, how do we move information from our heads into our hearts, into our hands? And I've concluded that storytelling is the most powerful way to connect meaning to information to people, really. And so I'm excited to hear about the project and thinking about the day that we can go into the museum and see this on a wall and have the timeline. But what I want to hear from you are your stories. I want to hear about your husband's experience in the internment camp. I want to hear about your mothers and your fathers and your parents. I want to know, you know, what their experience was like.
We only heard bits and pieces because our parents never liked to talk about how it was in Funter Bay. But I used to hear my mom get mad all the time you know, about Fronter Bay. Of course, he was just probably a teenager in them days. But, you know, they never talked or told us about how it was to live in Fronter Bay. It was hard, very hard. And, oh, it makes me sad. When I first came a couple of years ago, 2016, I saw what some parts of what they went through, and it made me sad. I felt so sad. The cemetery, going into the cemetery was like going into a cave or something. And they seen the old coal stove, the parts, pieces and parts of the stove on the ground, and some of their cooking utensils were on the ground. It was sad.
Thank you for saying that. Yeah, I think that my family's from Agigig, and learning about the history of Alaska, I think one of the most difficult things that I hear people say is that we didn't talk about it. And it took me a long time to understand that that's a survival apparatus, that my mother and my mother's generation were silenced because that's how they survived. Their silence is what kept our people alive. I think that's how they coped.
After we got older and stuff, Mom, Dad tried to, you know, our island was run by the government. We had rules, or they had rules to live by. But still, Mom and Dad never said, we're having a hard time. Like today, you better eat this or you're going to go hungry. But Mom and Dad never told us that. Mom always had food on the table all the time. It was all our subsistence and all the supply boats that brought in our groceries in them days, and we were all limited from the store. I think it was how big your family was, you could have got so much food. So that's how I remember growing up.
How long ago was that?
I'm 70, 71, so it's got to be about 70 years for me.
Yeah. Well, I think that it's important that people know that this wasn't that long ago. You know, this was still in your lifetime that these things happened.
So I'm happy, you know, this generation is starting to find out about the Fronter Bay, how it was. And it's still hard for them to understand, you know, how they lived and what they went through. Nowadays, it's starting to get like that. Poverty.
Yeah.
High cost of living. Yeah, it's getting harder and harder.
Does anyone else want to share their experiences?
Yes, this is Jacob McCleaf, and my mom, her name is Mary Lou McCleaf, and when she came down to Fronter Bay, she was only 8 years old. And, you know, she never really talked about it, and until later on when I started hearing about it, I asked her questions, and she would talk about living here in Juneau. My grandparents are Lawrence and Natalia Prokopyov, and they both came up to Juneau and worked from Fronter Bay. So maybe, you know, my mom and my aunt Vera had it a little bit easier. But when she talked about being here, she said she was always hungry, and they would walk around. And she talked about going to the federal building here in Juneau and riding in the elevators. You know, she was 8 years old. My aunt was 9 years old. And by the time they left here, they were about 11. And I have a niece that's 10 years old now. And when I look at her, I think, you know, how hard it would be if her family was brought down here and living in the same conditions, and, you know, it would be pretty tough. My dad was 10 years older than my mom, and he joined the military while he was down here. And like Zanita said, the government kind of ran things. Even though he was in the military, they only served in Alaska because there was a commercial fur seal harvest going out on St. Paul Island, and they took the men from Fronter Bay back to St. George and St. Paul to harvest the fur seals. And, you know, that made it a lot harder for families that were living down here, you know, so you don't have the fathers here to provide and help you and stuff like that. And I know there's ladies, Mary Bartakowski, an elder in St. Paul. She's no longer here, God bless her soul. But, you know, they wrote a letter to the government asking for better conditions. And I can't really look at and see the people living in a big, long building. Their rooms were just blankets separating them. And Z mentioned that where they go to the bathroom is either up a hill or off the side of the cannery. And you know, I grew up in a big family. My dad always hunted and fished, and he worked as a butcher at the store in St. George and St. Paul. And we ate a lot of subsistence foods, and it also was where that I never really went hungry. And some of the food, when I look at when I'm growing up now, I kind of think, you know, I said, you know, it tasted really good. And sometimes maybe we didn't have meat and we had potato soup with bacon in it, and I liked it. And we ate halibut, sculpin, seal meat, and in wintertime, ducks and sea lion. So, you know, they took care of us. And growing up, I never really felt hungry. Maybe I missed out on some good food or, you know, snacks and stuff like that. But regular food, we always had something to eat. And I'm thankful for my parents, and I feel bad for what they had to go through when they were younger.
Yeah, thank you for that. I like, I'm trying to build like a visual in my mind of what the camp looked like and what the conditions were. And you guys have said you've heard bits and pieces. And do you have like this vision of what it looks like in your mind? Can you help us build that so we can share that same vision?
I didn't get to see the building part, just the cemetery, a couple of years ago. But Martin and Richard Saharoff, they were there. They're the ones that repaired the crosses at the cemetery.
Wow, thank you for doing that.
There was a lot of work that's been done in the 90s and the early 2000s replacing crosses. And the cannery that the people were in is no longer standing. There is no cannery there anymore. But the cannery that they were placed in at Funter Bay was abandoned for about 20 years before the people of the Aleut people were brought down there. And there was no heat. There was no running water whatsoever. There was nothing to take care of people there. There was three outhouses that went over the bay, and that's where everybody had to go to the bathroom. So three outhouses, that's all they had. So if you could imagine throughout the winter, no heat, no way to keep yourselves warm. All they brought was a bag with them. They were told they could only bring a bag, one bag with them. It was a rushed thing, very mismanaged by the government. The government, when they were bringing the people down here, they didn't even know where they were going. They didn't know where they were going to bring the people of St. Paul and St. George, along with everybody else that was on the boat, the Delaroff. And they settled at Funter Bay, and there was only enough room at Funter Bay to hold St. Paul and St. George, and there wasn't even enough room for that. There was actually two camps in Funter Bay, one on the north side of Funter Bay and one on the south side, and the south side was where the St. George people were, but the cemetery was shared by both communities. And just to kind of give you an idea, you could find pictures of it and older pictures of Funter Bay.
Thank you for that visual. And in prepping for this, I was going, like, what words to use. I learned that some of the other terms that I found in going through the internet was duration villages, internment camps. They also used words like forced relocation. And I found that the difference between an internment camp and a concentration camp is how people were treated. I think that the language that we use and how we talk about it is so important. You know, when we look at like the effects of what happened here in Alaska and around the United States, is very, very, very similar to the Holocaust. And a lot of the same effects, sterilization, you know, this forced relocation placed in camps where they were poor conditions. And we know that a lot of people died in these camps, you know, from diseases and mistreatment. Oh, go ahead, Nico.
Well, I just wanted to add to that in that it's definitely something to think about because the terms that you used are probably what we would consider maybe more the harsher terms, which are the ones that I think we've all started to use. And actually, a lot of the Japanese internment camps are switching now to using the term concentration camp. But if you look at the original documents and a lot of the letters, the logs from Fish and Wildlife, they actually tended to use words like evacuation and refugees. And it's a completely different connotation in that it makes it sound like
they were willing.
Was willing or what was being done was a good thing. And I think the switch in language is actually much more of a modern term. So actually, in probably in doing your research, when I've been doing research for this exhibit, early searches, you would find nearly nothing, almost no resources until you really started to think about how they would have labeled it at that time period. And most of them are refugees, evacuation, those types of terms. And I think that that has a very different meaning to what actually happened.
Which is why there's so much surprise. I mean, I felt I was telling my coworker in preparation for this, and I felt shame, you know, as an Aleutic Aleut woman that I didn't know this history. And I had to sit with that for a second because it wasn't taught to me in school. So why would I feel like I should know something that I didn't know, you know, and looking at like the history of Alaska or the history of our country, you know, and in a lot of ways they have gone out of their way, you know, by using terminology that doesn't fit or, you know, by all different means that there's reasons why we don't have this information. And I think that's why I think it's so powerful to have you guys here sharing your story and, you know, the story of your husband or the story of your mother, you know, to bring life to them.
When you look at what was going on down there, even little kids, I have a cousin that was there that passed away when he was only 2 years old. So, you know, looking at that, you could tell it's really tough. And when they talk about internment camps and stuff like that, even the Germans that were in prisoners of war in the United States had better treatment than what our families had down there in Thunder Bay. And there's people from all over the Aleutians, Nikolsky on Alaska, Atka, and I don't know if there was anybody from Attu, but I guess some of the people from Attu ended up in Japan being prisoners of war. You know, it's pretty tough. And they had people down in Ward's Cove and some of the other places in the southeast. And, you know, it's St. Paul, St. George, and there are people from Nikolsky and some other places in the Aleutians that never got resettled. So it's tough part in our history of our families and stuff like that. I makes my eyes want to water when I think about it.
Absolutely. I do. I mean, I think for me as an Alaska Native person, the hardest part of this history is that it isn't widespread. You know, without having this knowledge, then we just see the effects of it. You know, what happened to these villages when I was in Dutch Harbor and on Alaska and doing presentations and visiting there? I didn't see one person that one Aleutic person from there. And I asked, well, where is everybody? And this is before I knew the history, you know, and in visiting a lot of these villages, you know, there's usually a higher population of Alaska Native people. And they said, oh, they made their money and they left, you know, but then to find and walk around Dutch Harbor and to learn that history, they didn't leave. You know, they were relocated, you know, even people that live there, that isn't firsthand knowledge. So for me, when we look around and all we see is the effects, you know, we see our Alaska Native people struggling in a lot of different ways. A lot of us are in poverty. A lot of us are incarcerated. A lot of us struggle with drug and alcohol. And like the science behind that, you know, comparing it to the American Indian Holocaust, then things start to make sense, you know. But when we don't have this story, when we don't have the full story, then we blame people for how they survive.
I was talking to a friend the other day, Okalina Patricia Gregory, and she's from Unalaska. Her dad is Niklakanoff, but I can't remember her mom's name. But she's down here in Juneau, too. I wish we could have contacted her and have her come here and talk about it. And when I told her we were talking about Thunder Bay, and, you know, she said she wanted to be here to talk about including all the other communities along the Aleutians to be brought up and, you know, recognized like we're working on Thunder Bay right now.
Absolutely. Well, yeah, she's more than welcome to. Yeah, we would love to do more shows that specifically focus on people's stories.
Yeah, and that makes a good point because Thunder Bay is only one of about six other locations. St. Paul and St. George were in Thunder Bay, but there was the Atka people were in Killisnoo, and then you had all the other locations. So this is one location, and like Jacob was saying, Patricia wants to get and make sure that the cemetery for the people where the Unalaskans were kept is the cemetery is up to par and well taken care of and respected. So it's growing throughout the other communities where these people were kept during World War II.
That's a really great point. Yeah, thank you for remembering the other villages that were also a part of this.
Jacob mentioned the other villages would like to have this project there, and I think this is something that Nico could address. I'll defer to her.
I know I've spoken with Patty. She works for the Aleutian and Pribilof Island Restitution Trust, and she has lovely ideas about kind of spreading this project that started here and maybe using the same model. Because in addition to the camps that Martin spoke about, there's also Burnett Inlet, which is near Wrangell, and then Ward Lake, which is near Ketchikan, on top of Wrangell Institute, which is where a lot of the children were forced to go. And I think ideally it would be fantastic to do a similar project of awareness and exhibits and interpretive panels and protection acts that would really bring more of this story to life, because I think that's what stuck with me the most about this is similar to you. I didn't know this history at all, which is absolutely sort of terrifying that something so large and so impactful isn't common knowledge, even here in Alaska. So I think that's something that's motivated all of us to kind of do more. And then as far as we've gotten here with these fantastic people, thinking about what the next step is and where we can go from here.
That's so great. We're going to take a quick break and then we're going to come back and hear more about the project.
Trouble, 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 band, dog, and mouse, oh, since the day I was born.